Good morning and welcome to the Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte, Florida. This is a live medical talk show in which you're invited to participate. If you have a question or comment along the way, please call us at 941-206-1580 or toll free at 888-441-1580. And now here's your host of the show, Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
Good morning. Hi, everyone. I'm so glad we have, you know, I just heard the commercial of me talking, and boy, it's interesting to hear yourself on the radio. And we have Dr. Katzen here today. And
good morning.
Of course,
good morning.
Zane, our master engineer.
Good morning, everyone.
Yes. And good morning, Dr. Katzen and everyone. So I'm very, very happy to say we have a great program today. Listen, one of my ladies who works in the office said she went to a place. I'm not going to mention the name unless they want me to in the future. And they all said, gee, during the day while we're working, we listen while they're making sandwiches. We listen to your radio show. How about that? On Fridays. I think that's really great.
I wonder if I sing a song, maybe they'll bring us sandwiches or something. No.
And they make salads, too. So, which, by the way, everybody...
Maybe they'll just come and serenade you.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, everyone, I I'm speaking about this frankly on the air. This is my third week of a very low-carb diet. And I can testify to say that I've really been putting the pedal to the metal.
How do you feel? That's what I want to know.
Well, I have to say the second week, and I told one of my patients, I said, I was having headaches. Because, you know, when you are withdrawing from carbs, you can get headaches. Also, when you withdraw from coffee. Now, I'm not stopping my coffee, but I have been cutting back extremely. I have no bread. I'm telling my patients, no bread, no rice, no pasta. No beans at this time, very low carb. And I think one of the things that people are really confused about is what is a carb? We've spoken about that. And I think another thing is reading labels. What say you, Dr. Katzen, about labels?
Well, labels are very important on food. But to make it really easy to look at a label, just look at the first four items of what's on the package. If you see high fructose corn syrup there, then there's just too much carbs in that product. And the other thing you should look at the label is just to look for how many carbs there are per serving. You may buy a box that has 20 servings, and it'll have maybe two or three carbs per serving. But if you eat all 20 of them, you get a lot of carbs.
Right. That's the biggest thing is you got to look at the portion. And how do you look at the portion? When you buy something, you look at the serving. For example, I found, and I'll give this out to everybody, and I only found it at Winn-Dixie, was Daisy cottage cheese. If anybody out there wants to call in with their tips on how to follow a low-carb program, please give me a call here at 206-1580. Because I found the cottage cheese called Daisy cottage cheese. It only has 4 grams of carbs per serving. And, you know, that's really important. If you look at any of the, some of like people say, well, I eat yogurt or I don't put sugar in my food. If you look at those, like some of the yogurts, they have up to 35 grams of carbs.
I was just getting ready to tell you about this new discovery that I found over at Publix in the produce department.
Yes.
They make this wonderful yogurt parfait. Every morning they make these, and they put fresh fruit in them, and it's yogurt. And I mean, I don't taste a lot of sugar. That doesn't mean it's not there, but still.
Well, the problem with fruit is that fruit has fruit sugar called fructose, and that is just as equally a carb as granulated sugar. And if you're trying to be on a low-carb diet, you really have to limit the amount of fruit you have.
And I'm the worst at that, too. When I look for energy, like for work, for my other job, which is really physically strenuous, I reach for a Mountain Dew, which is the worst thing I could do. I know that. It's like,
you mean a real Mountain Dew?
Mm-hmm.
A real Mountain Dew?
Yeah.
With sugar in it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, no, no.
Well, that's about 200 carbs for 200 calories for a 12-inch.
And it keeps me flying for about an hour or two, and then there's a big crash.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. That's what I'm trying not to do. If you really can limit your carbs, and I mean, I tell my patients I'm going lean and green. So lean protein and greens. What are the greens? Kale, cabbage, bok choy, broccoli, zucchini. I made eggplant last night in the oven. It was so good. So all these things I'm trying to, green. So, and, you know, of course, salads. But remember, lean also the lean proteins. It's very important that you get an adequate amount of protein. And yes, I'm eating an egg a day. It's fine. I eat a hard-boiled egg a day. So that's really, really important. But a lot of those parfaits, they also have granola with raisins. And granola is a carb. All right. I mean, I love it too. That's what I'm trying to limit. But if anybody has, you know, any words of wisdom, again, read your labels. Look at the amount of carbs, protein. Look at also the carbs. If you take the total carbs and you have fiber, you can take the total carbs minus the fiber, and that's what's called your net carbs, which are going to affect you the most. That's really important.
Yes, it is. And remember that when you have a soda pop, with a, you know, not a diet one, but a regular one, you've got about a little over 200 calories in a 12-ounce can. And a normal workout, strenuous workouts, only burns up about 300 calories.
Well, the ones that I do, though, 1,000.
Oh, no kidding.
An hour, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
wow. Yeah, I do spin class for an hour, which is going to burn, I'm told, 600 to 800. And then I do an extra 500 or 600 on incline. I'm the exception.
Right.
And for everyone out there, one of our biggest concerns as we get older, you're talking about exercise, is becoming frail. No one wants to become frail where, you know, you're losing your balance, or you get so that, you know, you're scared that if you fall down, you're going to break something right away. And one of the things that helps prevent the frailty syndrome, as it's called, is exercise. Mm-hmm.
Using your muscles makes your bones stronger.
It's so important. Exercise and your muscle mass. If you don't have muscle, that's where you start losing your muscle mass, which is called sarcopenia. That's where you get to be frail. So that's really important. But everybody, please, you know, if you have a prayer, help say a prayer for me to keep on my program, because I am doing it. I'm really excited. And one of my patients this week go, Dr. Triana, if you can do it, I can do it. And I was really happy to say, well, I'm going to tell you, it's really hard.
It is. It's, I can't believe how hard it is. I mean, it's like the biggest thing for me is portion control. I can't do it because I have to feel full. I'm one of these people that I eat until my stomach says, don't eat anymore.
Well, that's the whole thing. People that are overweight, there's hormones in your stomach that talk to your brain. And they say, guess what? We're full. Satiety. Well, people who are diabetics or people who are overweight, those chemicals, those hormones do not work well. So they are not speaking and doing their job to tell the brain, guess what? You've eaten enough. And you know, one of the things we do that we are working more and more towards at the Triana Prevention Center is helping patients keep a balance in their life. And this balance is conducted by hormones.
Right.
So we're going to talk about very important thyroid hormone. But first, I want to do, what body part am I? So this is this. Everyone pay attention, because this one is not so obvious. Okay. What body part am I? Sometimes I am known as the third eye. I'm deep in the brain. I produce a hormone which helps my body know day and night. If I work the night shift, I get out of rhythm. Guess what? You can't beat the clock. This is very, very important. What body part am I? So we're not going to give it away. It's if you call and give us the answer, we'll be so happy.
You've stepped up the difficulty.
It is.
Quite a bit.
Yes, I've gotten a little more difficult. And we've got other. Whoop, we got a caller.
Yes, we do.
Hello, caller.
Pineal gland.
Ah!
Wow.
Yay! I thought that was really hard.
Well, the third I did it.
Oh, you are so good. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
And I hope you enjoy the show.
Oh, absolutely. And you have a grand weekend. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you. You know, the weekends are really hard for me.
Listen, let me tell you something about this.
What?
Do you understand that hard is a four-letter word, and you have to be very careful with your verbiage?
Ooh.
You know, something that's hard can find an easy, also a four-letter word, way to do it.
Whoa, sweetheart, you are smart. Thank you so much.
Very good.
That is really good. Well, I'm going to say that I'm not going to be hard anymore. I know a friend of mine told me, she said, you've got to be very I am positive. I'm a positive person. And I feel very good that I've been so good for 3 weeks.
Yes.
And I'm not eating any carbs. I'm not even getting to toast with my dinner. I'm not drinking any alcohol at all because alcohol turns into sugar. And even though I like nice, good wine when I go out to great dinner and great restaurants, I'm just drinking water.
Well, and it should all be worth it now that you have found an easy way to do this hard thing.
You are so smart.
Yeah, drinking water also softens up the bill.
Exactly.
Thank you for enjoying the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I really thought that was going to be the hardest one. I am so happy that someone was listening and saying the pineal gland. And we're going to talk about the pineal gland today. But first, we're going to talk about a very important gland, which we have spoken about before, but we're going to get a little more in depth, and that is the thyroid gland. So the thyroid gland, take it away, Dr. Katzen.
Okay. The thyroid gland, everybody knows, is in your neck.
Where in your neck?
Just above your sternum, which is the little notch that you can feel at the bottom of your neck.
So everybody, take your hand, put it up to the sternum, and feel...
On either side.
On either side where you're...
There are two lobes to the thyroid gland, and they're connected by an anatomic bit of tissue called the isthmus. And it's just like any other isthmus. It just connects the two portions of the gland. The gland is normally, each gland is normally just a little bit more than an inch in length and probably a half an inch in depth on either the right or left, on both the right and left side. Now, the thyroid gland is functions by putting out a hormone called thyroxine and another hormone, which has later been called thyroxine. I'll get into that a little bit more in a second.
So but, some people also, if you palpate, we call it palpate, or your neck at above the sternal notch, some people have their thyroid enlarged.
Right.
We call that a goiter.
Right. The thyroid will enlarge for... either because of under-stimulation or not enough nutrients to make an adequate amount of thyroid. Like, for instance, in the Midwest, the Midwest used to be known as the goiter belt. And then we started putting iodine in the salt in order to provide the population with enough iodine so that their thyroid glands could make a normal amount of hormone, and the goiters tended to either shrink or go away. The thyroid gland can also enlarge because it's overstimulated by the pituitary gland, which controls the amount of hormone that the thyroid produces.
Isn't it beautiful the way we have this incredible orchestra playing in our body, and it's all coordinated by our brain, by our hormones. That's one of the reasons I just love medicine so much. It's always something new and interesting and learning and putting it together for my patients.
That's correct. Now, people sometimes will have an overactive thyroid gland because the pituitary puts out too much thyroid-stimulating hormone, and more of the two elements of the thyroid of the hormone are circulating in the blood. We have two elements circulating in the blood. One is called T4 and the other T3. The active hormone on each individual cell is the T3. And the normal gland puts out approximately 80% T4, which is inactive until it's converted to T3, and 20% obviously as T3.
So this is really important because you have receptors. People do not realize that you have receptors for hormones all over your body.
Well, that's correct. The thyroid gland is more or less a gas pedal for a lot of organs in the body. And if there is not enough hormone being produced, then they have symptoms of hypothyroidism.
So tell us, what are those symptoms, Dr. Katzen?
Well, the symptoms of hypothyroidism sometimes can be very vague and sometimes can be very common. Like, for instance, cold intolerance. You know, a lot of ladies have cold intolerance. Cold hands and feet, fatigue, especially in morning activities, dry skin, constipation, obesity.
Also swelling of the legs.
Swelling of the eyelids, too.
Swelling of the eyelids, and swelling of the legs.
And one other interesting thing is, on the bottom of the feet turn yellow.
And there's also can be a body temperature problem.
That's correct. A lot of people, sometimes people will be hypothyroid in spite of the fact that they seem to have a normal amount of circulating hormone, both T3 and T4. And that is because their receptors are not responding normally. So how do we make that kind of diagnosis? Well, we take the patient's temperature first thing in the morning, and that temperature should be around 96. The patient's normal temperature is 98.6. So a low morning temperature may well be an indication of hypothyroidism. In other words, not enough thyroid hormone is being not enough thyroid hormone is available to the various tissues. Another consideration is sometimes the thyroid kind of goes wonky and doesn't produce the right combination of T3 and T4. And so the patient may be hypothyroid on that basis.
But there's other causes, too, of hypothyroidism, such as Hashimoto's.
Right. There are two basic inflammatory conditions that kind of compromise the thyroid's ability to produce the hormone. One of them is called Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune disease, like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. Those are autoimmune diseases as well.
Autoimmune means that your body is actually fighting your body.
Your body is producing antibodies against an organ in your body. And another common inflammatory situation is called Riedel-Struma, which is an infiltration of the thyroid gland by a certain kind of cells called lymphocytes. And these will compromise the ability of the thyroid gland to produce hormone, even though the pituitary is telling it to do it. Another reason for hypothyroidism, some people who have brain tumors, which are irradiated, and the pituitary gland is in the radiation field for a period of time after that radiation stops, takes quite a while sometimes for the pituitary to recover. And that area just above the pituitary, called the hypothalamus, does not produce where the actual thyroid stimulating hormone is produced, has decreased function as well. And another reason for the receptors to be your thyroid receptors to be depressed based on if you have exposure to pesticides, and particularly fluoride intoxication.
And we know also that, unfortunately, people who have experienced closed brain or head injuries, also because it can affect the pituitary gland, will also affect their thyroid.
That's correct. Remember that the thyroid, the actual thyroid-stimulating hormone, is produced in the hypothalamus, which is just above the pituitary and is slightly more towards the eyes.
And we know that a lot of, especially a lot of women come in and they're overweight and they think, well, you know, I have a thyroid problem. Well, they may have a thyroid problem, but there's other, and the best thing to do are doing, we're going to talk more about. The importance to know is that there's other symptoms too with hypo or low functioning cycle.
Correct.
Not having
correct. There are
that too.
Like, there are 40% think that a lot of people have this illness. Are a problem and not necessarily the production of thyroid hormone.
But you need to have certain nutrients in your body, certain like selenium, sure. Iodine.
Right. But other elements are part of that hormone, like selenium. Selenium is a trace element and usually included in most multivitamins.
So it's really important to know, to check also your thyroid stimulating hormone, but also your free T4 and free T3, if you want to get accurate assessment of the thyroid.
Well, no question about that, because without free T3, there is no thyroid hormone activity.
So this is really important to know when we check your levels, is there's more to it than just one simple test.
That's correct. And really, most of the time, if somebody comes into a physician's office and they have a low thyroid, frequently they'll be put on T4 as a medicine. And T4 may solve the problem. On the other hand, if oral T4 doesn't solve the problem, we have to look for other causes, the receptor causes.
Right, and there's some preparations that have T4 and T3 in them.
That's correct. The normal ratio between T4 and T3 that's produced by a normal thyroid gland is 80% T4, which is not active, and 20% T3, which is the active hormone.
Those are the desiccated thyroid hormones.
But that's bioidentical.
But if you take, for example, levothyroxine or Synthroid, which are chores.
That's correct.
So this is really important. You feel like you're having a problem with your thyroid and you have some of these symptoms, this be checked. And one of the things we do at the Triana Prevention Center is that we do advanced hormone testing to check your whole batch of that orchestra.
Well, that's correct. That's really important to do.
So you have a complete assessment. How is my thyroid? We also do other, and you have to also, which we're going to be speaking on a different show about the adrenal gland and its importance, because what it does also affects the thyroid.
Right. If the thyroid gland is not properly, then neither are your adrenal glands, because there's a link between the amount of thyroid hormone being produced and the amount of cortisone which produced from your adrenal glands.
Let's bring it circle here. As you all know, I'm a lipidologist. One of the first things I check when somebody comes in with a high cholesterol, triglyceride, the thyroid. If the thyroid is not optimally working, that affects the metabolism of your cholesterol.
That's correct. Now, so, you know, we've been talking about hypothyroidism, but the other entity is hyperthyroidism. And hyperthyroidism can occur if the pituitary is putting out too much thyroid-stimulating hormone. And sometimes people will develop a tumor in the thyroid called an autonomous nodule, which they put out hormone which is not regulated by the pituitary.
So that would be a hot nodule.
A hot nodule. That's correct.
But sometimes the thyroid has a cold nodule.
Well, cold nodules can be tumor, either benign or malignant, or just simple cysts. And the way we diagnose that is by doing a nuclear medicine iodine scan, which tests the ability of the thyroid to capture iodine and outlines the normal gland, and a tumor will be a defect in that outline.
So the takeaway pearl is?
Takeaway pearl is just be, no, you have to know a little about your body, like Dr. is always talking about, and know that sometimes even if you have a low T3 and T4 and somebody's prescribing T4 for you and you don't get results, then you have to keep looking as to what the underlying cause might be.
So that's really important to know. The takeaway pearl, and what pearl we call that in medicine? What is the pearl, the take-home pearl? Well, or the bottom line, as right. some people say, is, you know what? There's
to diagnose hyperthyroidism, then hyperthyroidism is when you see a patient with hyperthyroidism, you know it the minute you walk in the door. You see somebody who's like a cat on a hot tin roof.
And they'll agitation.
They'll complain about very fine hair. And but you see people who can't sit still, you know, whose eyelids are opening and closing all the time, and it's pretty obvious that this person is kind of like on a cat in a hot tin roof, and that makes the diagnosis pretty easy.
Their heart rate is going super fast. They start having, they look like tremors. They shake when it's really active. They feel like they're on a fast train.
Yeah, they're on a treadmill all the time.
And you can see it. And sometimes they also can have a goiter.
Right. Now, there's another entity in the thyroid hormone arena called type 2. Hypothyroidism. And type 2 hypothyroidism is when what we have been talking about previously, where the thyroid gland is producing a normal amount of thyroid hormone, but the patient is hypothyroid.
So, I think we're ready for our little break. Did you want to add anything else?
No, I'm ready for any questions.
You're listening to The Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues, brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte. We encourage you to visit their new website, which is trianapreventioncenter.com. That's T-R-I-A-N-A Prevention Center, all one word, .com. To catch up on previous shows, there's an archive going back to the beginning of the show, and it covers a wide variety of topics. Dr. Triana is also accepting new patients currently, and we'll ask the doctor to give her phone number out in just a little bit. In the meantime, if you'd like to call this program, our numbers are 941-206-1580. That's 941-206-1580. And toll free at 888-441-1580. 888-441-1580. And now back to Dr. Elizabeth Triana and Dr. Katzen.
Thank you. Thank you, Zane. And yes, our phone number at the office is 941-625-1990. 1990. So if you want to be seen and you feel you have a thyroid problem or any other type of medical problem, we're here for you.
I'm just laughing because you were talking about the person with hyperthyroidism and, you know, they complain and they're always real hyper and everything. Kind of sounds like the mother-in-law. No, I'm only kidding. I don't have one.
Well, one thing we failed to mention is the exophthalmos. There's edema of the fat around behind the globe, and that's why people's eyes kind of pop out.
Didn't one of the Mrs. Bush had that? The older lady?
Yes.
She had unfortunately, she had it too. And I think the first President Bush also had hyperthyroidism, where his heart rate went, he developed atrial fibrillation. That's another cause of a cardiac arrhythmia is hyperthyroidism. So if a patient comes in and their heart rate there is irregular and they have atrial fibrillation, they can also be overactive thyroid.
Well, that's correct.
Is that Graves' disease we're describing?
Graves' disease is hyperthyroid.
Okay.
So that's really important to know that, you know, the thyroid is tiny but powerful. Tiny but powerful. It's very important. So now that we, again, if anybody has any questions, you call us at 206-1580. If there's a topic you want to hear about, we're here to answer your questions. And actually, I have a patient question. We'll talk about at the end of the show. We talked about what body part am I? And that body part we talked about is the pineal gland, a very interesting gland deep in the brain.
Well, the pineal gland has been a fascination for doctors for many years. But it does produce a hormone called melatonin. And melatonin is a bioidentical hormone that you can buy over the counter at any food, at any drugstore, CVS, Walgreens, whatever. And melatonin regulates the body's calendar so that it can tell day from night. During the night, in the dark, melatonin is produced by the pineal gland. During the day, it is somewhat produced by the intestine, but not a lot. So the majority of the melatonin that we produce is during the night. So, for instance, people who work the night shift, when they come home and go to bed, if they have the lights on, and a lot of people can sleep with the lights on, they don't produce melatonin. And then they have restless sleep. Now, the use of melatonin is people who travel a lot will frequently use melatonin to try and ameliorate the signs of jet lag.
Now, Dr. Katzen, you were a traveler. You traveled a lot. You yourself said that you have tried using melatonin.
That's correct. You can buy melatonin in the store at one milligram dose, 3 milligram dose, and 5 milligram dose. But if you're trying, and this is a very important thing now where people are getting ready to travel on their summer vacations here and there, but let's say you're going to travel from Punta Gorda to Alaska, and you have a 5-hour difference in time. And when you get to that Alaskan trip, hit the soil in Alaska, you want to be able to be up and move around. You don't want to be crashing there. So one of the tricks of the trade has been to take approximately 1 gram of melatonin. To take five grams of melatonin.
Yes.
For every day, every hour that you're going to be losing. For instance, you'll be losing about 6 hours going to Alaska, so you need to take 30 milligrams a day for those 6 days.
So what you need to do is you take the melatonin for every day, about 5 milligrams at the most a day.
Yeah, excuse me, I've got the dose screwed up here. You need to take 1 milligram per day for every hour that you're going to be losing. So if you're losing 6 hours, you need to take 6 milligrams per day for 6 days. Now, you should start before you travel.
You should start before you travel, and that's important to know. But also, you were a pilot before, right?
That's correct. A lot of pilots do this.
And did you not do the physicals you were doing?
Yeah, I was a senior FAA examiner for the West Coast of Florida.
So what did that involve? You did their physical exams.
Yes, you know, commercial pilots will usually be examined by their company each 6 months. Commercial pilots have to have a physical exam every 6 months. So one six-month period, the company medical department will examine the pilot. But just so there is no bias, the pilots are then required to have an outside physician examine them in the alternate six-month period. And that's what I used to do here. And that's called a Class 1 examiner, and that's only for airline pilots. Pilots who either have a commercial ticket, they are only required to have, let's say, one exam every 12 months, and people who have a recreational license every 3 years, or every 2 or 3 years. I'm not sure about what the current regulations are.
So how many years did you do that?
20.
Oh, that's
more
good.
Than 20, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was out to Oklahoma City, and I had a certificate as an accredited accident investigator. That doesn't mean I went out there and to try and find out what the accident was all about. But every accident has a pilot in there, and we want to make sure that the pilot was not on any drugs or was on any drugs that might have contributed to the accident.
So you looked at the medical aspect of the accident.
That's correct.
So that's very interesting. And you were in the military, right?
That's correct. I was in the Air Force.
So all you military veterans out there, which we salute you also, and we salute you, Dr. Katzen.
Well, thank you.
Tell us how you ended up in the military. I think this is very interesting.
Well, when I was going to school, the Korean War was on, and in order to stay in school, we used to have a deferment. So we had what they called an S2 deferment. So as long as we stayed in school, we were not eligible for the draft. But then after college, we were eligible for the draft unless we went to medical school. And when we went to medical school, there was a law called the doctor draft law. And in that doctor draft law, you were eligible to be drafted till age 35. So I had done my internship at Boston City Hospital, and I was doing my residency at Mount Sinai Hospital when all of a sudden one day I got a little notice from the government said, bring your toothbrush, a change of underwear, and whatever, and report to such and such a place. The usual thing that somebody 18 to 26 would have received. And then in handwriting underneath that, I heard there was a little handwriting that you'll hear from the service to which you're assigned. Well, the Air Force was an all-volunteer service, and the only draftees in the Air Force when I was there were the doctors.
That's interesting.
Because, yeah, and what the reason that prompted all these draft notices to go out to doctors was in November 1961, the Russians closed the corridor between East and West Berlin, and so there was no way for supplies to get to West Berlin, and there was some threat that we'd have to start the Berlin airlift all over again, which was during the Truman administration after 1945.
So that, because of that, you were drafted then.
That's correct. And I was sent to Japan because of the Berlin crisis, which I think is not unusual.
I think that's interesting. But, you know, it's very interesting when you hear the different life stories that everyone has that also concerns their career.
Oh, yes. And I took a real interest in aviation medicine. And became a flight surgeon, was in the chamber to see what happens to people who have anoxia, got the certificate as a certified accident investigator, and really had a serious interest in aviation.
But you also became a pilot.
Yes, I was a pilot, and I flew all around the world in my little MU-2, which is called a rice rocket. It was a Japanese airplane, very fast, very fuel efficient, but difficult to fly.
And that's really interesting because of your love of aviation. You went, not only were you were practicing also medicine, and taking care of these pilots and checking them out.
That's correct. I mean, it was just a side hobby, but a very important hobby, to take care of the pilots, because one of the problems that pilots have is what kind of medicine are you are, sort of like what body part you are. Well, you can't, some medicines are forbidden, like a pilot can't be on any kind of narcotic or can't be on any kind of medicine that might affect their vision. And in those days, we had a very limited number of medicines that we could use to treat even mild hypertension. We could only treat hypertension with diuretics. And after all, if a pilot had to take some medicine, then he was grounded. He couldn't work.
Well, there's more that they can do now, but still, I think that's a very interesting history to hear, you know, what was allowed before and what wasn't.
Yes, yes. And I enjoyed practicing general medicine then, and as I do now.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. One of the things I find with patients is they need to try to, I call it brown bag, which means bring your medicines to your doctor. I think that's one of the biggest problems, is that patients don't always understand what medicines there are. And if they're on generic medicines, you know, you might go to your pharmacy this month and get your medicine, and it's a pink-colored pill. And you might go next month, and the pill, which will be the same thing, they buy it from a different other company, could be a yellow pill.
Well, that's because of this the movement to using generic chemicals rather than brand-name chemicals. And people can understand that because there is a dramatic difference between the cost of a known medicine and they're using a generic. Well, one of the reasons for that is that the pharmaceutical company who invented the medicine or who created it needs to get their investment back, because it takes an awful lot of money to bring a new medicine to the marketplace.
And all the research and the marketing and everything else. But going back to the melatonin, did you find that helped you when you were traveling around the world?
Yeah, particularly did, especially when I had to go to Taiwan. During the early 70s, I had a little thing going on in Taiwan, and I'd be flying from Florida to Taiwan. And I really didn't have too much trouble going from east to west. But coming back from west to east, if I didn't use some melatonin or something, I just couldn't function for about a week. And now that's a 12-hour change in time. So you got day and night completely reversed.
Well, I could see where you could really get jet lag with that.
Right. I mean, it's a real brain fog when you have that kind of jet lag.
And you know, for all of you out there, I know a lot of people are on their way home driving, and some are flying home. Our snowbirds, which we do love our snowbirds, but I will tell you, if you're driving home, I've been telling my patients, please get out every 2 hours and walk. And if it's okay with your doctor and you don't have a problem, I would say at the very least you should be on a baby aspirin, because people who are driving and flying can have produced blood clots in their legs.
Oh, no question about it. Probably the most common reason for people to have a pulmonary embolus from a clot is that they've been on a long flight, they haven't had compression stockings on, which is what I would recommend to most elderly people. At least get a pair of compression stockings. You can buy them at Walgreens or UBS for $7 to $8.
It's very important. And get out and walk and stand up, even if you're, you know, see if you can on the airplane. But especially because a lot of my snowbird patients, they drive, and it's a couple of days in a car.
Right. No question about that. Now, one of the things we didn't talk about with the melatonin is that people who are not making enough melatonin have some symptoms. And those symptoms can be they feel very agitated at night. They have restless leg syndrome, which is something that people lie down in bed and they always have some irregular pain in their legs. And then, as well as there is premature aging, people look a lot older than their stated age. And they have high blood pressure as well.
Now, some people use melatonin to help them sleep. And I know there's one of the biggest patients will tell me, I can't get to sleep, or when I get to sleep, I wake up in the night. But I think we need to look not just at what hormones, it's very important, but many people wake up in the night
apnea.
Because also they may have sleep.
And sleep apnea is something that isn't modern vogue now, but many, many years ago, most of us didn't know about sleep apnea.
Well, there's more and more research, and we know that patients who have sleep apnea or unable to sleep, well, that's one of the first things they say. You know, if you read, for example, the Bale Donin book, Beat the Heart Attack Gene, people who have sleep apnea or do not get a restful sleep have a higher incidence of cardiovascular disease. So it's really important too for your hormones. Our body produces hormones on what's called a circadian rhythm. There's a rhythm to it. Just like, you know, the rhythm.
Well, that's basically what the melatonin does. It just helps your body know where it is in day and night.
Is there a preferred time to take melatonin? Can you see a person taking it in the day, or is it just at night?
Well, it probably would be best taken at night because that's when it's normally produced, if you feel you need it.
Many people, you know, I think over the years become very dependent on sleeping pills and for sleep. And I always try to see, is there anything else we could do? For example, if you can't sleep, is it because you don't have a good place to sleep? Is where you're at quiet, dark, cool, restful? Are you constantly being interrupted? Like a lot of young mothers come in, they're very, very tired. And by the way, young mothers, I have a lot of young mothers after they have a baby, that can also affect the thyroid function. I've had many young mothers come in and they're hypothyroid.
That's correct. Well, they've had a big demand on their metabolic system making that baby.
That's right. And I've had patients and they come in and yes, they are hypothyroid. Another thing to look at is the rest, as I was saying, and sleep apnea, also alcohol. Alcohol promotes sleep apnea because alcohol affects all the muscles in your body, including the ones for breathing and in your throat.
That's correct.
And you might be more prone to snoring.
I'm sure that's correct, too.
Yes. So alcohol is very important in terms of getting a good sleep, because if you drink alcohol, though it may relax you, higher dosages of alcohol can affect your sleeping patterns. You've heard about REM sleep, the different sleep patterns. So that's really important. And those sleep rhythms in your body also affect your hormones.
Yeah, it's really interesting that some body functions only occur when you're asleep. For instance, you produce growth hormone when you're sleeping.
That's very important to know.
And a lot of people are taking supplements which they think will increase the amount of growth hormone they have. But if you take it in the morning, it's not going to do you any good.
Yeah, I remember going to the local vitamin store and seeing that HGH stuff.
Right. Well,
I didn't fall for that.
Yeah, but a lot of people do believe in it, and they take it during the morning. It doesn't do any good because your body produces that growth hormone at night. And you can't buy growth hormone over the counter. But what they are selling are what they think are chemical precursors, human growth hormone. And if you want to have those precursors available for your body's metabolism, you better take it at night, just when you hit the sack. Because that's
recommending the book that...
If you're produced in the body, various hormones produced in the body is a very... It's quite... at meetings, pretty good. And this book is very... 3 milligrams a day. No matter when you take 3 milligrams, probably be better at right. You should take. It'd probably be better.
Research. No, we do a lot of you to know where we get our information from, so that you too, if you want to read about it or learn more about it, of course you can always, you know, you can send me an email at Dr. Triana at TrianaPreventionCenter.com. Have is mymenopause.com. So I think that's really important that everyone knows there's ways, you know, I am running into so many people, that we run and say, oh, well, I love your show. I listen to your show. So I said, please call. Well, I'm too shy. Or if I call, I don't want to interrupt. I'm listening to everything you all are saying and your guest. But if questions, please do it. You know, we're going to be having guests in the future. And we have the more, what body part am I?
That's right. Well, we thought we'd stump you today, but we obviously didn't.
No, boy, that was great. The caller was really up to date. We're going to try to get harder to really make those brain cells work. Anyways, thank you, Dr. Katzen. Thank you, my beautiful audience. I really want everyone to know, stay healthy and don't go down that slippery slope of unhealthy. Be healthy. God bless.